Welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. On this week's show, Kathy Hart's going to be talking with Ann Barham about her book, The Past Life Experience. That's coming up in just a moment. But first, Alan Wishart has the health news.
If you struggle with anxiety, you might want to skip that second cup of coffee, new research suggests. For some people, caffeine may help with concentration and provide an energy boost, but it can cause problems for those with general anxiety disorder, said Dr. Julie Radico, a clinical psychologist with Penn State Health. In a university news release, she said caffeine is not the enemy, but I encourage people to know healthy limits and consume it strategically because it is activating and can mimic or exacerbate the symptoms of anxiety. Low doses of caffeine are in the range of 50 to 200 milligrams. Consuming more than 400 milligrams at once may lead to feeling overstimulated and anxious and bring on symptoms such as racing heart, nausea, or abdominal pain. Diabetes brings with it a variety of long-term complications, but at least one of those, heart failure, is a bigger threat to women than men, new research suggests. The risk difference was even more pronounced for women with type 1 diabetes. Study author Toshiaki Okuma said our global review of 12 million people shows that having diabetes increases the risk of heart failure in both women and men. However, this increase is greater for women than men. He's an honorary senior fellow at the George Institute for Global Health at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. One of Okuma's co-authors, Sani Peters, quantified these differences. Type 1 diabetes was associated with a 5.15 times higher risk of heart failure in women and a 3.47 times higher risk in men, meaning a 47% higher risk of heart failure for women compared to men, she explained. The study was published July 18th in Diabetologia. Financial rewards for quitting smoking do help smokers, including pregnant women, kick the habit and remain smoke-free, a new study confirms. Study lead author Dr. Caitlin Notley said rewards, such as money or vouchers, have been used to encourage smokers to quit and to reward them if they stay stopped. Such schemes have been used in workplaces, in clinics and hospitals, and within community programs. She's with Norwich Medical School of the University of East Anglia in England. For the new study, the investigators analyzed 33 randomized controlled trials. The studies included more than 21,600 people in 8 countries. The researchers found that after 6 months or more, people who received financial rewards were 50% more likely to have quit smoking than those in the control groups. The study was published July 17th in the Cochrane Library. Broken heart syndrome may harm more than just the heart, new research suggests. While the extreme stress of losing a loved one has been linked to heart troubles in prior research, a new study found that 1 in 6 people with broken heart syndrome also had cancer. Even worse, they were less likely to survive their cancer 5 years after diagnosis. Study senior author Dr. Christian Templin said there seems to be a strong interplay between Takotsubo syndrome, or broken heart syndrome, and malignancies. He's director of acute cardiac care at University Hospital Zurich in Switzerland. He said it should be recommended for Takotsubo syndrome patients to participate in cancer screening to improve overall survival, adding that the reverse is also true. Still, the study did not prove that one causes the other. The findings were published online July 17th in the Journal of the American Heart Association.
Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have Ann Barham today with us. She is an author of The Past Life Perspective. She's also a psychotherapist, licensed marriage and family therapist. So welcome, Ann.
Thank you. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. How is your book going?
I'm sorry, say that again?
How is your book going, The Past Life Perspective?
Oh, doing nicely. We've gone from hardcover to a softcover edition. And it looks like I might be doing something with the Oprah online magazine here soon. So I'm kind of expecting we might really have a push there.
That's fantastic. What led you to write a book about the past life experiences?
Well, I've been doing this work of guiding individuals to their own memories of their prior lifetimes in order to resolve long-standing issues much more quickly than I found I could do in conventional therapy, and also to help them explore the whole mystery of their spiritual adventure on the planet as a human being. And so I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I've always kept recordings and notes on my sessions, and the stories are so fascinating, and there's so much real wisdom that comes through that can be applied to many of us that I really thought it would be a shame if this wasn't shared on a broader base. So I wrote the book.
And were you raised with the idea of the past lives and reincarnation?
No, actually, I wasn't. I was raised in a conventional Roman Catholic home. And I think I began really exploring other religious traditions when I was in my adolescence and discovered many of the Eastern traditions and the concept of, that we were eternal souls that lived multiple human lifetimes, not just one. And that just really resonated for me. So something that I got into on my own over time, and I just find that it's a very, very helpful perspective to have as we approach human existence on the planet and what we're doing here and the connections that we automatically feel to people that we think we've never met before and the talents that we bring through and also the issues that we come in with.
This is fascinating. So you've done psychotherapy, regular psychotherapy. How do we get that inkling or that idea about past lives rather than we're just working through this life?
Well, it's something I've been exposed to in the past, and in fact, I had a really interesting experience when I was in graduate school getting my master's in counseling psychology, where I was in a therapeutic imagery class, and that typically focuses on leading a client through imagery. Maybe that's going to, if someone, for instance, is a cancer patient, to help them imagine the radiation going in and gobbling up the cancer cells or something along those lines. And it turned out that the professor of that class, kind of under the cover, was into past life work, and he decided toward the end of the class that he wanted to demonstrate, just in case we ever had a situation with a client who, where it looked like they were going through a different lifetime. So he wanted to demonstrate how to do that. And I volunteered to be his subject, and he regressed me there in the front of the class on this very dirty carpet.
Wow.
And in front of all my classmates. And we looked at an issue that I had with my my feet, where I'd had some surgery on my little toes, and it still hadn't resolved this problem that I was having. And I had a very dramatic experience with that. Went to a lifetime where, as a young Asian woman, my feet had been bound, and I rebelled. It's the whole story to it. But at the end of it, from that day forward, the problem with my feet, it was resolved. Just boom, overnight, all of a sudden, gone.
That's fascinating.
So after I had done a certain number of years of conventional work with people, it came to me that was the direction that I wanted to go in. And then I was very fortunate that some of the major masters of past life work at the time showed up to do professional trainings very close to where I live. And so it was one of those things that was meant to be.
And in your practice, in your therapy, do you manage to just do regular therapy for the most part? And then when you come to situations, do you recognize them as being past life, or is it just all past life work now?
Well, at this point, it's almost all past life work because that's what I'm known for, and that's what people come to me to do. Occasionally, I'll have a past life client that'll end up doing some conventional therapy afterwards. But for the most part, the people that are coming to see me know that this is the main thing that I do, and that's what they're looking for. But I will, you know, talk with them beforehand about what it is they're wanting to look into and whether or not it seems like it's really more explained by an issue from their current life rather than that it would be appropriate to go into past life work.
And what does it look like if we're going in? What kind of exercises would you have us do in order to start to bring up past life memories?
Oh, well, there's a lot of wonderful little exercises and things to do at the end of the chapters of my book. So there's, after I go through a story from a client and point out the links between that prior life and whatever issue they were looking into in this life and the important spiritual messages that came through, I provide some exercises at the end of each chapter that the reader can actually use to start expanding their own awareness and maybe exploring some of their own past life material. So it might be something like even looking with a different eye at recurring dreams or very vibrant dreams that you may have had, because very often those dreams are actually past life material bleeding through. Sometimes those kinds of dreams where we wake up kind of wondering, did that really happen or not? You know, where that daze sort of, it seems so real and so present. Or a dream that keeps coming up for us where we're in a certain place with certain people or a certain thing is happening, and it's a dream that we have over and over. So that can be one of the clues to some of your past life material, but there's quite a few other things that you can do to try to develop that awareness more on your own.
So, Anne, is this a gentle experience, or is it, can it be traumatic to have to go back into past lives?
Well, part of it depends on what it is that the client wants to explore. So if they're coming in and they really want to find out if there's a past life link to the fact that they were abused as a child and they've been in other abusive relationships and et cetera, the likelihood is that we're going to go back to something that wasn't particularly pleasant. I have yet to have a client go screaming out of my office or not be able to deal with whatever comes up. But sometimes, you know, they're not the funnest scenes that we'll go to because there's been so many instances of man's inhumanity to man over the ages.
Absolutely.
And particularly, you know, if you think of back in the Middle Ages, the way people were tortured and things that were done. So some of these memories are not pleasant. One of the things that we're able to do in the work, though, is if something starts feeling a little too intense for the client, then we can just kind of float up and watch it as if it's a movie that they're watching or as if it's happening to someone else, so that they're not as engaged with being in the experience themselves. But that's very rare that I need to do that. For the most part, when people come to see me and they're wanting to work on a particular issue, it means that they're ready to deal with whatever it is, and that if they weren't ready for it, they wouldn't be pursuing doing a session with me. And I've found that just to be borne out very, very large majority of the time that I work with people.
Okay. We're going to have to go to a quick break, Anne. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about the past life perspective.